You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Second and goal. And they'll hand it off again, and they will score. And it is Mercer Timmis. First touch of the ball game, third touchdown of the new season. At the 25. Now a little pump and go. Got his man. Touchdown, Terrence Tolliver.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it's another good week to be a Ticats fan. This team, holy smokes, man, clicking on all cylinders right now. 2-1 in sole possession of first place in the East after their 31-17 victory over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last Friday. I can't tell. I think 2015, man, was the last time I felt this good about our Ticats.
Absolutely. This team looks tremendous right now. Offense, defense is just all clicking, and it's just really, really fun to watch.
It's a lot of fun to watch. Let's start with the main stories from this game, and this might sound like a broken record, but we're talking about Jeremiah Mazzoli's continued brilliance. This guy, I don't know if they could do him justice. 31 of 41, 369 yards, only one passing touchdown, and he threw an interception. He has now had eight consecutive 300-plus passing yard games, one shy of the CFL record, co-held by Sam Echeverry and some guy named Ken Austin. Mazzoli now leads the CFL in passing yards, completion percentage, and he is in third with his 102.9 passer rating. This guy has... I saw some tweets out there saying, man, stop talking about haters, stop talking about stuff like that. He doesn't have haters, he doesn't have critics, he has people who are behind him. They just want to see him do it again. I don't entirely agree with that, Mike. I think there are still people out there. In fact, I still get messages from people out there who do not believe in Jeremiah Mazzoli. We're going to get into one that you ran into out in Edmonton, some idiot out there who doesn't believe in Jeremiah Mazzoli for a completely ridiculous reason. But nonetheless, he is not a Mazzoli believer. But he's silencing his critics every time he steps on the football field, man. This is quarterback play the likes of which we haven't seen in a very long time.
Yeah, like going back to 2015 when Zach was at his peak. I mean, what else does Jeremiah Mazzoli have to do to prove the critics wrong? This has been over half a season of games where he has performed at a very high level. This game might have been his best game I've ever seen. Not a ton of touchdown passes or anything like that, but moving the ball down the field, his completion percentage was through the roof at 75.6. This guy's an all-star player. He's an all-star quarterback. He's a top three quarterback. He might be a number one quarterback in the league right now.
I know it's super early to say this, but if you're looking for a clubhouse leader after 3 weeks for MLP, it's Jeremiah Mazzoli. And not to sound like a homer, Mike, but I don't think it's even close. Like, I think he is head and shoulders playing the best football of anyone currently in the Canadian Football League. And I don't think number two, and there's a lot of great players out there. Mike Riley's played great. Bo Levi Mitchell's still hanging around there, although he hasn't had that great a season this year. There's some great players. There's some great – I won't say terrible, but I will say it's not good. This is probably his worst season of his career. But we're not talking about him. I'm just saying out of all the players in the league, in the Canadian Football League this year, no one at this point in the season has played better football than Jeremiah Mazzoli.
No, there's been players that have had good individual games. C.J. Gable comes to mind in last week's game. Mike Riley, obviously. But Jeremiah Mazzoli is just – I can't think of anyone that is touching him right now.
No, it's – and it's so much fun to watch too. Like, it's – he's in such command of this offense where you watch him throw the ball and it's –
you have confidence that it's going
to
be
almost unfair. It's almost unfair to the rest of the teams in the league because he just looks so damn good. Like, it's almost like it's the old NBA jam. He's on fire. That's how Mazzoli's playing right now.
Yeah, it looks easy for him and the Ticat offense right now. They're just – every time he releases the ball, I have that confidence that, hey, this is going to be a complete pass. You know, the receiver's going to catch the ball, and maybe they'll turn it up because we have talented receivers too. Maybe they'll turn it up for a big gain. But every time he lets go of the ball, I have confidence that it's going to be a completed pass.
Yeah, when your worst game of the year is going 25 of 36 for 344 yards, rushing for a touchdown and throwing an interception, when that's your worst game, you're playing at a pretty freaking high level.
Yeah, it's a joy to watch. We have our quarterback. We have our quarterback of the present and the future right now.
Absolutely. The other thing that came out of this game that I really want to touch on, because I think it is such – the numbers here just blow my mind. The Hamilton Tiger Cats, to kick off the second half of this game, absolutely dominated the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for 15 minutes. They dominated them for about a half an hour in there. The Bombers went a full 30 minutes of game time without picking up a first down. That's incredible. But just listen to these numbers that the Ticats, both offensively and defensively, put up in the third quarter. Hamilton's offense, 12 first downs. Winnipeg's offense, 0. Hamilton's offense scored 15 points. Winnipeg's, 0. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers ran 5. Yes, 5. Offensive plays for a total of 8 yards in the third quarter. And the last, certainly at least one I know that you love, time of possession, the Hamilton Tigercats held the ball for a touch over 12 minutes of game time, meaning Winnipeg held the ball for a little less than 3. That's basically a shutout when it comes to, the only thing better than that would have been 5 offensive plays, 0 yards, and because there's no way you can't hold the ball for 15 minutes in a quarter, you know what I mean? But this is essentially the equivalent of a football shutout. Just mind-bogglingly great numbers.
Yeah, and when going into the half, it was 16-10, so it's still a close game. But, you know, that dominating third quarter really set the tone for this win. You know, they put 15 points up, Winnipeg, nothing. So they take that big third quarter lead going into the fourth, and this game is basically over. So it was huge for them to come out at the start of the third quarter and really dominate, and that's exactly what they did.
All right, Mike, let's get into our individual yays and boos for this. Let's kick it off with the positive stuff. Mike, what's your number one yay from this game?
My number one yay has to be the play calling on offense.
Ooh,
I mean,
superb.
Superb. It looks easy out there. It seems that our coaching strategy is just a step above everyone else's because they're just making it look easy. One specific play call was a fake wide receiver screen on second and short, and then they went down the field to Brandon Banks, I believe. I just thought that was immaculate play calling. You know, you don't see that enough. And we've talked about this before. On second and short, why not take a shot? And to fake them out, you know, they were doing those screen passes to the wide receivers quite a bit. It didn't work out great a lot of the time, but that faked them out. They went deep, and I was gushing over it.
Man, there was so much about this play calling that I liked. We talked about it a week ago with the schemes this team has done with Max Protect, 6 offensive linemen, Nikita Whitlock in the backfield as a 7th blocker, which gives Mazzoli time. If you give this quarterback who's playing at an all-star, all-world level right now more time than he needs, guys are going to get open for him, and we saw that in this game. But whatever the Bombers were trying to dial up defensively, when they were trying to get pressure, Jones and the offense had an answer for it. Mazzoli, there was a number of times when there was a free blitzer coming off the back end and Mazzoli knew it was there and he got the ball out for a quick hitter, maybe picked up 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 yards. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like no matter what Winnipeg tried to do to disrupt this offense, it just didn't work.
No. And Mazzoli just has great pocket presence to be able to, you know, he's not running the ball a ton, but he's just moving around in the pocket to buy himself a little more time. Not that he doesn't have a lot of time, because I think the protection's been great. But when it collapses a little bit, he's, you know, takes a sidestep, buys a little more time, finds an open receiver. It's beautiful.
Well, and this offense, too, mixes the run and the pass so well and did that really well in this game. And that makes it easier for both running the football and throwing the football. You don't know what the offense is going to do. There were times on 2nd and 10. I remember one run, and we're going to talk about Sean Thomas Earlington in a second. He had one run, I believe it was 2nd and 10, ran for like 12 yards, picked up a first down, ran a draw play.
Yep.
That's not something that was in the offense a year ago at this time. Now it's there, and because the Bombers are selling out for the pass, 2nd and 10, that's a throwing down. You hear the commentators say that all the time. and they run a draw play, and it worked beautifully. And it's just it brings a tear to my eye how efficient this offense is right now, Mike.
Yeah, we're only at game three. We're going into game four. I think this is just going to keep going up and up and up because, you know, we have a couple injuries. You know, I don't even know what they're going to do with the running backs because they Mercer Timmis and Thomas Erlington have been amazing. Like, there's a couple guys that are just waiting. John White, Alex Green are just waiting there, and they're talented guys too. I don't know what they're going to do when they come back.
It's an embarrassment of riches at the tailback position, especially when two of them are Canadian. The ratio flexibility that gives this team, holy smokes, man. You mentioned him. Let's get into your number two, yay. Talk about Sean Thomas Erlington. What a game from the kid.
Where did this kid come from? I mean, I obviously I knew he was on the roster and everything. We never really seen him play in a meaningful game. But wow, I mean, the runs that he had, the one where he jumped over the defender, which was just great to watch. He just really impressed me. This kid has talent, and it looks like he has a bright future.
11 carries for 92 yards. A ton of highlight reel runs. There was the one where he got stopped in the backfield, did the reverse, and came around. Mazzoli was looked like Mazzoli was about to throw a block, but didn't. But it just the stuff that this guy did a week after Mercer Timmis had his breakout game, Erlington has his, and now it's like you don't know who's going to get the rock at any given time. They've made this offense so varied that no matter who is – like if Whitlock's back there, I think you can maybe tell that it's going to be – a passing play, although Timmis can go back there and block too. Sean Thomas Erlington plays a little bit of slot. Like, June Jones needs to get a ton of credit for how he is using his roster and maximizing everyone on the game day roster. Like, everyone seems to get a chance to shine. No stone is being left unturned, and it's just you never know week in, week out, whether it's in the receiving corps or in the backfield, who's going to be the man. It's genius, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, well, you know, he's been around for a long time. He's pretty much seen everything there is to see in football. You know, he has the resume offensively through the years, and he's brought it to the CFL. He's one of those American coaches that I know he had a little time in the CFL, like as a quarterback or something. But one of those American coaches that have been coaching the four-down system for years and years and years, he takes his philosophies to the CFL, and they're just working out perfectly.
He adapts to the changing game so well. And it's not, again, you think of, he's an older coach. Like you said, he spent decades playing four down ball. It's almost like this has come second nature to him. Like, could you imagine what he could have done up here if he didn't get any chances down south? What he would have been doing as a coach? He could have been one of the all-time great coaches. And I know people are going to hear that and go, man, it's only been 12 games, but it's been a really impressive 12 games. And now that teams have film on what his offense can do, for them still to be putting up numbers like this, that's super impressive. And Thomas Erlington, I don't want to negate him in any way. This guy was an eighth-round draft pick, and you don't get guys drafted that late that really make an impact. If you go look at the year, I think he was drafted in 2017. Go look at who was drafted in the eighth round with him. It's a bunch of guys who never made the squad. This guy's an eighth round pick, is out there making plays, leading the team in rushing in a game. It just, again, it speaks to Jones just using everyone. He doesn't care where you're from, what you do. He will find a use for you. It's incredible, man. We thought this offense would be good before we saw all this during the season. Now you think about it, with the possibility of a John White or an Alex Green coming back, with the emergence of these guys, with Jeremiah Mazzoli playing out of his mind, with this receiving core, man, this offense could be the best in the CFL at year's end.
It could be a record-smashing offense, to be honest. Like, that's projecting a little bit, I know, but just the first three games, minus maybe the Calgary game where they kind of weren't that great. I mean, I can't wait till they play Calgary again because I think it's going to be a different story. But yeah, man, like this offense is exceptional right now.
It's funny because, like, as a Ticat fan, I wonder if you feel this too. Like, I went into that game, I'm like, okay, like they should win, right? Like, they went in on the road to Edmonton, they looked really good. Winnipeg's coming here, they look good against Montreal, but rookie quarterback, the Ticats have a lot of talent, but there's still that nagging, you know, pinge of doubt in the back of your mind. And I was talking to some people before the game, ran into some fans, ran into some listeners of the podcast, and we're just kind of shooting the shit and, you know, just talking amongst ourselves. And it was like, I think this is going to be a close game. because it's like, do I let myself believe that this team is as good as I want to believe that it is?
Mm-hmm.
And all they did was go out and absolutely overperform on what my expectation. I thought this was going to be a one-score tight contest coming down to the end. Winnipeg made it that way at the end, Mike, but this was kind of never – much like when I said I went and rewatched the Edmonton game, it was never in doubt. This one really wasn't either.
No, they played well the whole game. I mean, it's hard to find a game where the Ticats play four quarters of really good football, and that's what happened last week.
They've done it for two consecutive weeks now. They've probably played maybe in total out of the 12 quarters they played, maybe three bad ones. Maybe you could maybe say the fourth quarter in this game wasn't great, but you have a three touchdown lead. You tend to ease up a little bit. I think it's just human nature. Probably a couple quarters in that Calgary game in the second half, especially. They didn't play particularly well, but that's about it. Otherwise, this team has been clicking on all cylinders from the word go. And I don't know, it warms the cockles of my heart, Mike, that we're sitting here at the beginning of the season, not talking about losses. Like, I don't think in the history of the podcast, well, I know in the history of the podcast, you and I have never sat here talking about a 2-1 first place Hamilton Tiger-Cat team.
No. 2009 was the last time, right?
I believe so. 2004 the last time this team was 3-1. Hopefully we can get there this week. Okay, so I'm going to talk about things I liked about this game. We're going to stick to the offense for a bit here. I want to talk about this receiving core, and I know this is broken record territory. This is the same as when we talk about Jeremiah Mazzoli, but holy crap, Mike, this receiving core is loaded. Brandon Banks leads the way with 111 yards and 11 catches. We have Jalen Saunders catching 7 balls for 97. Luke Kasker had a bit of a quiet game, just 56 yards on 5 catches, but he was only targeted 5 times, which means he literally caught everything thrown his way. Mike Jones chipped in with 2 catches for 21 yards, so not so, like, you know, it's not the 120 he put up in week one, but he didn't drop any passes, and that to me is maybe the most impressive thing about his game this week. But the guy that I really want to talk about out of all this, Terrence Tolliver, 6 catches, 84 yards and a touchdown. He looks like he is completely healed from his injury last year. And just look at the difference, the 2 weeks with Tolliver that this offense has looked versus the week without him. Man, oh man, this is going to be fun.
Yes. He adds a new dynamic to this receiving core. I mean, we talked about it before, you got the smaller, speedy guys such as Banks, Jalen Saunders. You know, Tasker's not exactly blazing speed, but he's not a shorter guy. Terrence Tolliver adds that height, and you see it when he's catching the ball. So it's great to have him back. You don't see any rust, or like you couldn't even tell that he was out for a year. So to have this guy back is tremendous.
This receiving core now features the league's 4th, 5th, and 6th leading receivers in Saunders, Banks, and Tasker, respectively. Terrence Tolliver is 12th after only 2 games. And Mike Jones is 14th, and he's the CFL's top Canadian pass catcher after 3 weeks, man. Loaded.
Wow.
Receiving core is loaded. 5 guys in the top 15? That's insane.
Mm-hmm. I think we're on pace for 4,000-yard receivers. I don't really like that on-pace thing, but, I mean,
how can we not be excited about this?
Yeah. If things keep going the way they're going, we're going to have 4,000-yard receivers, which does not happen that often in the CFL.
It happens very, very rarely. Okay, my next piece of business here, my next thing that I want to talk about, the defense as a whole played really well, but I want to single out one guy, and that is number 21, the big dog himself, Simone Lawrence. Not gaudy numbers, 7 tackles. It was the team lead in defensive tackles. But it felt like this was a vintage Simone Lawrence game. You know what I mean? Like, he seemed to be around the ball all the time, making plays, chirping. Like, he had a down year in 2017, but it looks like the Hove, the Simone Lawrence that we all love, that we love for so many years, looks like he's back, looks like he's healthy, and I think this was kind of his breakout game for 2018, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like you said, led the team in tackles, had a QB sack in there. So he's got to love playing in Jared Glanville's defense. I mean, the whole defense obviously does. But, you know, Simone likes to fly around there, and that's the name of the game with his defense. So it's great to see him back to his old form.
Loves to fly around, loves to chirp, loves to have that aggressiveness, that attitude, that kind of get-in-your-face mentality that I'm sure Jerry Glanville absolutely loves. And he's not getting penalties. He's not costing the team. He's just playing hard-nosed football. That's what you like to see. The defense as a whole, I thought, was superb in this. We talked about a little bit earlier what they did in the third quarter. Look, they shut down Chris Streveler in the same way that they shut down Mike Riley, in the same way that they shut down Bo Levi Mitchell. This defense is for real. It is legit. Make all the old man Jerry Jones or Jerry Glanville comments you want. This defense is legit because of Jerry Glanville's attitude, and I love it. But now, Mike, we have to turn. If you got something to say, bring it on.
I was just gonna say, Glanville's 76 years old, but I'm like just listening to him talk. He's a young person at heart, and it doesn't matter like how old he is. He still has it. He still has it, and I'm glad he's on this team.
Absolutely. Okay, we have to flip the script here. We have to say about things we didn't like, and I think we can both agree. This is nitpicking. This is we're looking for things that where that we think the team can improve, because it's really hard to be negative about a two-touchdown win at home with your team sitting in first place. So let's start with you, Mike. What do you got on the things you didn't like in this game?
Well, on the first drive, Mazzoli threw that interception. It was a long pass to Terrence Tolliver. I don't think it was Mazzoli's fault. I think Terrence Tolliver kind of slipped, or maybe he lost the ball in there. Something weird happened there, but I didn't like that. It didn't turn out to cost us, so it wasn't that bad. And just the not finishing drives with touchdowns. Also nitpicking, I mean, we won the game by 14 points. But, you know, I take a little less, couple field goals and a couple more touchdowns. But I think they'll fix that as we go along.
They were in the red zone four times and only scored two touchdowns. Before this game, they were perfect in the red zone. It's one of those little things where you're like, ah, it would have been nice to see that streak continue. Mm-hmm. But this is little stuff. We talked a little bit about the screen passes earlier. They were throwing a lot of them to Banks, and yes, they did have that one big play that you brought up. So this kind of negates a lot of what I was going to say, to be honest. But it just felt like they went to him a lot, and they didn't really do much. I was hoping it would lead to maybe a bomb, and like they're on their own 25-yard line. They fake the screen one way, they throw one deep. Didn't really happen, but again, this is nitpicking.
Didn't they did that on second and short.
They did. You're right. I kind of forgot about that play, to be honest with you. Right. But I was more thinking like they faked the screen on their own 25-yard line and throw an 85-yard touchdown pass. I'm getting greedy. Come on, man.
I'm getting greedy.
And sticking with Brandon Banks, and again, it's not nitpicking, but this is just something that bothered me in the game. Led the team in receiving yards, as we talked about. So I don't want to be too harsh, but he did have a few passes that hit him in the hands. Yeah. And then hit the turf. One I thought early in the game could have set the tone. He was looked away to kind of see what was upfield and didn't secure the catch. But if he would have, that could have gone for a big gain, if not a touchdown. It's not a huge deal, but I think that this is something I hope we don't see from Banks going forward. Like, I hope this week he's focusing on securing the football and worrying about the yards after the catch after that. Again, these are tiny things that in a game that's closer might matter more, but in this one don't matter enough. But there's still negatives that I think we need to bring up, just like the things you brought up. Like you said, we won by two touchdowns, but they didn't finish drives. So
yeah,
again, yeah. It's just from this game. These are the things we didn't like, but there's way more that we did like, and I think that's
absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I remember screaming an expletive when Banks dropped that long pass. I know it's. Very rarely, my friend, but because that was the thing, right? With Banks, he had the dropsies for a bit, like early on in his receiving career. That seemed to go away. It seemed to go away after those first two drops in this game as well. So hopefully we don't see that again. Banks overall had a great game, but it would have been nice to grab those two catches since they were right in his hands.
Okay, let's talk Podsky Player of the Week. We put up the fan poll like we do after every game, giving you four options, three players and the other. The three options player-wise, Jeremiah Mazzoli, Simone Lawrence, Terrence Tolliver. This was a runaway once again this week. Jeremiah Mazzoli won it handily, 78% of the vote. Simone Lawrence had 8% of the vote. Terrence Tolliver had 5% of the vote. Other had 9% of the vote. We got a couple of good ones. Someone said the whole defense for player of the game, which I think is fair. Someone said Sean Thomas Erlington, which is also someone who I had considered, but come on, we knew this was going to be Mazzoli. There's another guy out there who quoted Chris Streveler for being a warrior after he posted, and let me check the numbers here, 146 yards on 17 of 30, with 5 carries, 55 yards, and a touchdown. He was 56.7% completion percentage. That is not warrior of the game, player of the game. But this slapdick made a couple of idiotic comments over the last couple of days about our Ticats that we'll get to in a minute. But that was the fans' pick, Mike. Our pick, I think we're probably going to get a little redundant here. But is there anyone other than Jeremiah Mazzoli that we have to pick again this week? You can't. He was the man.
No, you can't overlook that performance. The two-time Podsky Player of the Week, Jeremiah Mazzoli, the man.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he's not going to get a few more of these as the seasons go by.
He's going to be pumped, Josh. He's going to be so excited that he got Podsky Player of the Week. He's going to be bragging to all his teammates. Oh, I can't wait.
Well, that's what keeps him playing at such a high level. He doesn't want to give up the crown,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's all that matters to these guys. They don't care about winning. They just want to get their respect from the show.
Yeah. No. Great cups, MOPs, that means nothing. It's all about being the PPOT dub.
Exactly.
All right. Let's move on from the game that we're all so excited to talk about. Let's talk some Ticats news. Not a ton over the last week, Mike. There was one player released. National offensive lineman Braden Schramm was shown the door. He has since found a new home in Saskatchewan. And when you think about it, Schramm was a second-round pick just a little over a year ago, and it's a little surprising when you see teams cut guys that they pick so high in the draft. We saw it earlier in the offseason. Faith Akakiti was the number one overall pick in the draft. He was let go by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, since found a home with Montreal, although I believe he tore his Achilles and is out for the season. That's a tough break for him. But the thing with this, and like, I don't like when teams cut Canadian offensive linemen because you can never have enough. And then you look at the Ticats roster and you go, holy smokes, they really have a lot of Canadian offensive linemen. Not even counting the three starters. They have Landon Rice, Everton Williams, Darius Sirocco, who is a starter now, but he's a guy who, raw rookie, started 3 games on the offensive line. They have Brett Golding, they have Matthew Girard, and they have Kay Okafor. Like, there's a lot. That Mike Filer and Brandon Riverberg, obviously the other two starters. That's a ton of Canadian offensive linemen, a ton of guys they're developing. It sucks to see a guy let go, especially after they took him with a second-round pick. But it's mitigated or at least softened by the fact that this team is developing other Canadian offensive linemen. So it's not a huge blow. This could help Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan has a problem with Canadian depth and Canadian talent out there. Maybe he can find a role there and resurrect his career. But I don't think the Ticats are really going to miss him all that much. And it kind of sucks to lose a guy you spent a second-round pick on. But like I said, it's kind of mitigated by all the Canadian offensive linemen they have in the pipeline right now.
You mentioned Darius Sirocco. He was a draft pick this year as well. And, you know, he's just starting on that offensive line. So they have a plethora of offensive line talent that are also Canadians, and they didn't need them anymore. So I'm not going to question any roster moves this team does anymore, because they just seem to know what they're doing.
With the way Sirocco has played, like, it's, I don't know if he's played spectacularly, but you never hear his name when you, like, I go back and we rewatch the games that I'm at. You never hear him talked about. So he's not making any bonehead plays. Kind of makes you go, okay, the Ryan Bomben trade, I know we talked about a little bit last week, but it's like, this team's not really hurting having traded a guy like Bomben. They haven't missed a beat. In fact, I hate to say it, this might be a better offensive line than when they had Bomben. I know they're using more max protect. We talked about that earlier, but this offensive line is really damn good right now.
Yeah, it's they're really passing, running the ball. They're run blocking excellently. They're pass blocking great. It's they haven't seemed to miss a beat since they lost him. So, I mean, thumbs up to this, to the front office for, you know, recognizing talent. And if Darius Sirocco doesn't work out, then they got Landon Rice to plug in there too in that spot. There's a lot of depth on this offensive line, and I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's, like you said, kind of maybe we should stop questioning when this team makes moves, because they've all kind of worked out. Like,
They know what they're doing here, Josh. They know what they're doing, apparently.
It seems like it. So let's move on. Yes. That's it. That was all we had for Ticats news this week. So let's move on to some CFL news. Not a ton here either, but the big one of the week, I think that most CFL podcasts will be talking about, I think we should touch on it here. Kyrie Saber back to his old tricks again, and it finally cost him as he delivered a vicious helmet-to-helmet hit on Tavares Daniels in Thursday night's game between the Stampeders and the Red Blacks, and the CFL finally had enough, suspended Saber the very next day for 1 game. I think we all know a Bears reputation by now. I think most memorably is the clothesline tackle he made on John Cornish in, I believe, 2014, which kind of began the end of Cornish's career. Unfortunately, I believe he retired at the end of the 2015 season due to concussions that were kind of started by a dirty, dirty hit by a Bear. So I want to ask you a question here, pal. Do you think one game is enough?
No, I don't. I know that, you know, one game might seem like a lot just because CFL players don't get paid a ton of money and that one paycheck is taking quite a bit away from them. But in this case, this guy is a repeat offender. He's been known as a headhunter, a dirty player for many years. And this hit was just maybe the dirtiest I've ever seen. Just the way he launched, you know, he jumped, he launched his helmet into the other player's helmet. It was just a dirty, dirty play by a dirty, dirty player. And maybe he should have got more just because of his history.
I agree with you. I think more.
Maybe one more game. Maybe one more. You know, two games. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing is, I think one is probably the best we could hope for. Now he's been fined multiple times. And if when you notice, when the league tries to suspend guys for more than one game, it's rarely, like, it's usually overturned on appeal. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I hope we don't see this again. Like, I hope there's not a second incident where it's like, now we have to suspend him two games or four games or whatever. But he's shown this pattern of behavior. And you mentioned, like, on this hit, so I think Simone Lawrence went on Twitter and was like, he did everything we're told we're not supposed to do.
Yep,
he launched
himself.
He led with his helmet. He hit a defenseless receiver. Like, it's literally the textbook example of, you cannot do this. And yet he still did it.
Not anymore. Not anymore. And
no, this is not football anymore. This is we don't play the game this way anymore. Yes, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, this was a highlight reel hit. And you even had guys like Matt Dunnigan. And I'm very disappointed to hear this from Matt Dunnigan. Talk about how he loves the edge that Hebert plays with. For a guy that whose career was ended due to concussions and who has dealt with very publicly the effects of living with, like, post-concussion syndrome, I was a little disappointed to hear him kind of be like, this is okay. Not okay, but, like, I like Hebert because of how tough he plays, but, you know what I mean? Like, he kind of gave him an out, and it's like, we don't play football this way anymore. Yes, you know, big hits are still a part of the game, but you can do them cleanly. This is not football, and this deserved a suspension. I hope we never see it again, though. I really do. I hope that this is sort of take a game check from him and it'll change his – but he's 37 years old. He's been doing this a long time. I don't see it.
Yeah, he can't teach an old dog new tricks is the saying, and I think he's just going to keep playing the way he's always played. I don't have a problem with players playing to that edge, but once you go over it, there's a problem. I mean, Simone Lawrence is a guy that maybe plays to that edge, but he doesn't cross the line. And Hebert has crossed the line in his career many, many times, and he deserves whatever suspension he gets and whatever fine he gets.
Larry Dean plays to the edge. Salman El Mimian plays to the edge. Adam Big Hill plays to the edge.
They're not dirty players, though.
They don't
play
over the edge. Yeah. They're not. Yeah. They're hard hitters, but they're clean hitters. And every I like, there's sometimes when I see hits and they get flagged and guys get fined for it, and it's like, okay, you know what? Like, it in the heat of the moment, it's like you're going, like, I recall Adrian Tracy's helmet to helmet hit on not Matt Nichols, Drew Willey, probably, I think it was 2015. It was vicious. But at the same time, when you watch the hit, it's Tracy going down, he's aiming for the chest. And Willie ducks, and they collide heads. No flag was thrown. I don't believe Tracy was fined. The one thing Tracy did wrong there kind of led with his helmet. But at the same time, if you would have hit him in the gut, we're not talking about it. You know what I mean?
No.
So I know in the speed of the game and all that, some hits can look worse than others, and sometimes it's hard to react. This, to me, though, completely different. This was an intentional headshot from Hebert.
Mm-hmm. He has history, and this is it's just not cool anymore. We know people suffer after football tremendously with concussions. And, you know, Matt Dunnigan's one of them. I'm sure he still suffers to this day with concussions. And for him to say something like that, it's very surprising, to be honest. I like players that are hard hitters. This is football, after all, and people are going to get hit. But Kyrus Hebert isn't one of those players. He's just an over-the-edge, dirty player.
Yeah, there's no room in the game for this anymore, and hopefully we'll see less and less of it as the game continues to evolve. Last piece of CFL news, The Argos released a pair of veteran players today. Khalil Bass, linebacker, formerly of the Red Blacks and Blue Bombers. And a guy we know pretty well, Brian Timms, wide receiver, formerly of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I would think maybe a little over a year ago, maybe even a year ago at this time, because of how early the season started in 2018 versus 2017, how high we were on Brian Timms at this time. And now, could his career be over in the CFL? Like, maybe another team picks him up, maybe not. But, man, what a difference a year makes, eh?
We were really high on him because he played in a playoff game, right? He played one playoff game, performed well.
Yeah, and then coming into the next season, he had a touchdown. He had like 70 yards, and like he played like the last game of the regular season in a meaningless game between the Cats and the Owls, and like led the team in receiving. And then he played the playoff game and he scored a touchdown. It was like,
right,
okay, maybe this is the start of like guy gets his opportunity at the end of the year, shows something, superstar the next year. And then kind of the Cats cut him before Labor Day last year. The Argos picked him up. I don't think he played a ton for them last year. I know he was on the practice roster for a bit. Brought him in this year, and now before we hit the fourth week of the season, he's out of a job. It's just crazy, right?
There are a couple players come to mind, though, that were receivers that had a ton of potential, maybe even played up to that potential for a short time, and then all of a sudden they get cut, they get picked up by another team, and then you never hear or see them again. So, you know, hopefully Brian Timms bounces back, but he could be one of those guys.
Are you talking about the big three in Toronto?
Yeah, the Kevin Elliott, Hazelton. Is Hazelton still in Edmonton?
I think he's on the 6-game injured list, like every other person that plays for the Eskimos.
Yeah, but there was Kevin Elliott, Hazelton, and Torrey Gurley, and they performed well in that first year, and then now they're just not around, or they're on a 6-game, or they're just not performing on the field right now.
Yeah, and I just remember like that was a big marketing push by the CF, like the TSM was like the big three in Toronto, and they had pretty good first seasons, each of them with the Argos, and then they all get cut for whatever the reasons were. We never really heard, but, you know, poor attitude was kind of given. Then they scattered around the league. Elliot came here to Hamilton, played pretty well. I know that he spun the ball and you absolutely hated that. But yeah, he played pretty well. Gurley, I think, went to Winnipeg, and then I think he was with Ottawa in training camp last year. I could be mistaken. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. But he went to Winnipeg, didn't really do a whole bunch. Hazelton went to Edmonton. I think he's been there ever since. So that's kind of
what he's been all right. I think he's been all right.
But he hasn't really done much, right?
Yeah, hasn't done a ton, no. He's had flashes here and there, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, for guys that like everyone thought back in, what was it, 2015, I think? Thought these were going to be the big three for the Argos that were going to lead the way for them for the next 5 years. 2 years later, they're almost essentially all out of the league. And Brian Timms, one of the guys we thought was going to be, I think we were projecting, I think we even said, maybe me, I may have been you, I don't remember, talking about like a 1,000-yard year for Brian Timms last year. And
yeah,
who knows, his career could be over now. Kind of crazy how short, I know they say the NFL is not for long, but the CFL is not much longer.
No, not much longer at all.
All right, let's get to what I think is the most fun segment we do every week. Bozos, Slapdicks, Chodes. We only got one of each this week. I'm going Slapdick with my guy. You're going Bozo with yours. Let's start with you, Mike. Who's your Bozo of the week?
Well, my Bozo of the week is the guy from the Eskimos game. After the Tiger game, I went to the S game, and I was hanging out in the end zone with my buddy Mick and a couple other friends. And, you know, maybe I was being a little obnoxious, but I wasn't even talking to this guy. He was just standing beside me, and I was saying how Mazzoli, how great he is and all this, and he decided to pipe in. He said, well, it's not going to last long because black quarterbacks can't win because they can't play in the cold. This kind of set me off. It was a ludicrous, ridiculous, dumb thing to say. First of all, it's racist. That's the number one reason why it pissed me off. Second of all, it's factually incorrect. This guy needs to look at his own team. You know, I think he needs a bit of a history lesson.
Wasn't there a really good African American quarterback that played for Edmonton for? I want to say he won like 5 Grey Cups at the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. Or am I wrong about that?
No, I think you're thinking of what was his name? Warren Moon.
Warren
right.
Moon. Warren Moon. Just that guy.
Yeah, the CFL/NFL pro football Hall of Famer, you know, that guy. Yeah, he won a couple games for Edmonton, I think. I think Tracy Hamm won a Grey Cup for the Eskimos as well. I think Damon Allen was in there, too. I could keep going with black quarterbacks.
Yeah, Henry Burris, Bernie Custis, Chuck Ealy, even Casey Printers. I know he didn't have a long career. Won an MOP. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I guess, you know, those black quarterbacks in CFL, they never perform in the cold. No. Kevin Glenn, you know, had a horrible career, never amounted to anything. Kari Jones, you know, played in Winnipeg, never got to a Grey Cup or anything. Kerry Joseph, Marcus Crandall, you know, not a great quarterback. Never won a Grey Cup with Calgary, though. Like, no, I think African-American quarterbacks have done really poorly in the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, they just have no chance up here. So, you know, I think this is going to be the biggest bozo of the this.
Oh yeah, this is.
He's already won the Bozo of the Year award. Absolutely. Because this was bozo behavior to the max level. So to the idiot at the football game, I say screw you, my friend, and I hope I never see your stupid ass again.
You know what though? The one thing about this that really I found very heartening was you've publicly shamed this idiot. This bozo, and the people in your mentions that were just like, pretty much F this guy. Yep. You know what? That was really heartening to see. We saw it a little earlier. I think Edmonton was – I think in this game they brought a bunch of Muslims who's had their mosque burnt down, and there was a big thing about – we're bringing all these people who had the – and there was some idiot in Edmonton's Twitter mentions that was like, I'm no longer a fan of the Eskimos, and I'm not going to – I'm unfollowing you. And then just the amount of people who are like, all right, well, see you. There's the door. Like, we don't want idiots like you as a part of our fan base. We don't want idiots like this as a part of the CFL fan base, because there's no place for idiocy like this. Like, it's just – it's 2018, man. Like, let's stop with this crap.
Yeah, I mean – and I just want to say that I've never met anyone like him at any football game. Like, obviously, this guy is in the minority of CFL fans, but there are – holes out there, racist holes that still exist, and I wasn't gonna publicly shame him, but my friend Faye convinced me to do it because she was just she was right there too, and she had enough of it, and I'm glad I did, because everyone seemed to be really positive about it, saying that this guy's a big time jerk, a big time bozo.
Okay, so my slapdick of the week, I touched on it a little bit earlier, doesn't come close to yours, Mike. This is more fan idiocy than racist idiocy. But we talked a little bit earlier about a guy who voted for Chris Streveler as our Podsky Player of the Week, which is, you know, slapdickery for a number of reasons, considering we're a Ticats podcast and we're only picking Ticats players. But this same numbnuts went on Twitter and also said that our Hamilton Tiger Cats were on, and I quote, borrowed time, which, if I'm being honest, I think needs to be a t-shirt over at a merchandise store in the near future. I think that'll be a hot seller. And said that the Ticats aren't very good. And that the borrowed time thing, they've been on borrowed time for 3 years. This team has almost completely overhauled its coaching staff. Within the last 10 months, there's a new starting quarterback. How many players on this team weren't around 3 years ago? How is this team on borrowed time for over 3 years, and they aren't very good? And I know, Mike, that you and I can slide into the homerism from time to time, but I think at this point it is fair to say that this Ticats team that we have seen through the first 3 weeks of the 2018 season is pretty damn good. This is a good football team. This is not they aren't very good. This is a damn good football team that is a couple of mistakes away from being undefeated. Yeah, they're 2-1 first in the East, but this team has dominated their last two opponents, who play in the West, by the way, one of which came on the road. They got two more games against the West that they could also win. The Ticats could be 4-1 before the end of the month of July. This is a good football team, and I don't know where this slapdick gets the idea that they're not.
Yeah, we're not clinging to past success. I mean, I'd argue that we were on borrowed time last season, and the time ran out very quickly.
Absolutely.
And you know, we didn't make the playoffs, obviously. It was a bad year, except for the second half of the season. This is a new thing now. This is a new team now. There's players left over, yes, but there's a whole different atmosphere. There's a whole different philosophy. We're not on borrowed time. We're just starting, okay? We're just starting to rev it up here. And I hope that for the next couple of years, we're at the top of the heap. So that guy is a slapdick. He's just a little butthurt about his Bombers getting a beating by our Ticats.
Gotta be. The Austin era ended at 0-8 last year. That was the end of that era of football. Just like the Marcel Belfay era ended. And yes, you and I like to go back and say 2009 is the kind of the year where this whole thing sort of started to turn and the Ticats started to become competitive again. But there are different eras since then. The Belfay era, the very short-lived George Cortez era, the Austin era. We are in the June Jones / Jeremiah Mazzoli era. This is a new era of Ticats football. There's not a ton of remnants from the last 5 years still around. Yes, some players. Yes, some front office personnel. But this is a new group of people that get a clean slate, essentially. And so far, what they're painting on that new canvas, mighty pretty.
Yeah, and the players that are still around are still really, really good players. Some of them in the prime of their careers. So, yeah, I'm not worried.
All right, Mike, let's preview the upcoming game. But before we start talking about it, we have a sponsor for this segment this week, kind of the first sponsor in Podski Wee Wee history. The CFL Fans in Toronto is a group of guys in Toronto, obviously, whose mission is to bring together fans of all the CFL teams that live in the GTA area, and they hold viewing parties. And they hold these parties at the Three Brewers in Liberty Village, which is just a stone's throw away from BMO Field. And their first Ticats viewing party is this Thursday for the game against Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So Kevin, who runs the group, reached out to us to kind of coordinate this. So we said, anytime you do a Ticats viewing party, we'll be happy to plug it on the podcast. He's going to plug the podcast at his events. So if you're in Toronto this Thursday night looking for a place to watch the Ticats and the Riders game, head on over to the Three Brewers. It's at 2 Liberty Village Street in Toronto. And tell them Podski sent you. It's a pretty cool group, I think, up there to team up with. And I actually got to meet Kevin at the game on Friday. Pretty neat guy. Gave him a Podski t-shirt for him to give away at the event. And actually, we're going to have him on the show next week to talk about what kind of his hopes for the future of the group, what he's been doing. I think it should be a fun chat. So if you're out in Toronto, want to watch the game Thursday night, are a Ticats fan or a fan of any of the teams, head on over to Liberty Village, head on over to Three Brewers, watch the game, and tell them that we sent you.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what they're doing there. I mean, obviously, it's a little sparse for CFL fans in Toronto, but they're trying to build something with it. So, yeah, go check it out if you're in the area.
They're building a grassroots thing here. They're starting from the bottom. Now they're here, to quote Drake. No, right. It's not dissimilar to what we've done with the podcast. It's not dissimilar to what all the – they got the entrepreneurial spirit. They see a hole, and they want to fill it. That's what we did with Podski Wee Wee. That's what these guys are trying to do. I wish them all the success in the world, and I can't wait to have Kevin on next week so he can promote himself out there and get our great listeners to maybe latch on and make those parties a little bit bigger.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking to him.
All right. Now let's get to the game coming up this Thursday where our first place Hamilton Tiger Cats, man, does that feel good to say,
yes,
take on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Riders come into this game licking their wounds after dropping to 1-2 thanks to a loss at home to the Montreal Alouettes. Ugh. The team that lost 13 straight going into that game. The Riders kind of look like a mess right now, Mike. So we're going with that why we'll lose, why we'll win thing. So I got to hear it, man. Tell me why you think our Tiger Cats will actually suffer defeat on Thursday night.
Well, I got three reasons here, Josh. You know, obviously Brandon Bridge is the greatest quarterback who ever lived. So, you know, he's gonna give that defense a lot of trouble. You know, his running around and his wobbly passes. I mean, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough, Josh. And also, you know, Jerron Carter. You know, he was an okay receiver, but they switched him to cornerback, and now he's the best DB in the history of CFL football, NFL football, college football. He's just – you can't beat him. He cannot be beaten.
Super Cup MVP?
Super Cup MVP four times over. And also their impenetrable offensive line who never lets anyone by, and the quarterback is just – you know, he just sits back there. He has all the time in the world. So three reasons why the Ticats are going to lose.
I'm sensing a hint of sarcasm in your voice there, young Michael.
Oh, really? Oh, you think? Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit.
So here's why the Ticats are going to win this game. Maybe I'll have to repeat myself. The Riders lost at home to Montreal. No one loses to Montreal. And look, I feel for fans of the Alouettes. I know a couple of them. They're nice people. But that team is horrible. And they went into Mosaic and beat Saskatchewan. And it was a close game score-wise, but man, did the Riders look really, 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 really bad. If that's how they play against the Owls, the Ticats are going to go in there and beat them by 40, man. And the number two reason, you mentioned Daron Carter, greatest cornerback in the history of professional football. He's got to cover our boy Speedy B. And we saw Deontay Spencer burn him for a long touchdown. We saw Chris Williams come out of witness protection and burn him for a long touchdown. What do you think Brandon freaking Banks, Speedy freaking B, is going to do with Daron Carter trying to hand check him? He's gonna eat two bills. I'm calling it now. 200 yards receiving for Brandon Banks in this game and two touchdowns. He is going to light up, no pun intended, the cookie monster himself, Mr. Daron Carter. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, if he plays him the way that he played Chris Williams last week, it's going to get really ugly for Daron Carter. I mean, he wasn't even bumping him. Williams just like blew right by him on a... And they were going after him, play after play after play, deep, deep, deep. You know, Mazzoli's much more accurate passer than Drew Willey or that other guy they had in there.
Yeah, Jeff Matthews.
Jeff Matthews.
Jeff
right.
Freakin', we know all about Jeff Matthews.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, with a capable quarterback in the pocket throwing the ball, yeah, I could. It's not even that bold, really, to say that he could get 200 yards and two touchdowns. Hell, I'll say 200 yards and three touchdowns for Brandon Banks.
Oh, you're trying to up me? Okay.
Yeah,
what's Mazzoli going to throw for in this game then, pal? Because look, Mike was messing around. We both think the Ticats are going to kick the living crap out of the Riders in this one. We were doing that to be funny. What's Mazzoli going for? 400? 400?
He hasn't put up 400 this year. I don't know if he's ever put up 400, but yeah, I could see it. Listen, Chris Jones is messing up in Saskatchewan right now. I mean, he's such a stupid, stubborn, silly man. I mean, why isn't Daron Carter on offense? It doesn't make any sense to me. But anyways, yeah, he's going to get torched, 400 yards. It's going to be ridiculous. I know we're really confident right now, but how could we not?
Look. If we come back here next week and we're talking about a loss...
We'll eat crow. We will eat the crow.
Absolutely. Yeah. I will eat a heaping helping of it, and I got no problems with that. But even Rider fans, anyone who listens to the show, if you put the green goggles down and you really, truly see what the Ticats have done the last 2 weeks and what the Riders have done the last 2 weeks, you really can't go any other way than thinking the Ticats are going to win this game. And you know what? We went into... that Alouettes game with the Riders going, well, they're the Owls. They're going to get beat, and the Owls took the Riders to town. So strange things do happen in this league. But come on, man. We're riding high off a two-game winning streak. We got the best quarterback in the league playing the best ball he's ever played in his life right now. This offense is clicking on all cylinders. The defense is holding teams. Like, they're holding good quarterbacks like Bo Levi Mitchell to under 50% passing. What are they going to do with a guy like Brandon Bridge who –
or the other guy that they
oh, yeah, the Watford that they threw in the second. Like, that's
yeah.
They're pulling their quarterbacks at halftime. Like, the Riders, I had high hopes
they're
for
a mess.
Them. I really did. I thought that they last year they get to 10 wins. They get to the East Final. I thought, okay, they're ready to turn the corner. And then they look great against the Argos in week one. Maybe that's more of an indictment on the Argos. We don't know. Now, especially without Ricky Ray. I guess we don't really know, but like the Argos are winless and they have one bye, but man, oh man, it's just like, how can we not be supremely confident about our team going into this one, considering how well they've played the last 2 weeks?
I mean, you'd have to be dumb not to be. It's just the expectations are high coming to this game after the first three games of the season. The Ticats have performed at extremely high level. The Riders have not. You'd have to be either a huge Riders fan who can't see through their green goggles, like you said, or a complete idiot. So, you know, I'm at times teetering on the complete idiot, but you know, it's just, it's obvious that the Ticats are going to put a whooping on the Riders. I'm sorry.
Well, the thing is, too, like, what is Saskatchewan's biggest asset? It's that defensive line, right? Charleston Hughes, Willie Jefferson. Like, that's a talented defensive line. But Hamilton's, when the Hamilton goes max protect, you could essentially double team Jefferson and Hughes and then go man to man on anyone else. Like, they're going to blitz Sam Hurl? Like, yeah. The Ticats' strengths counteract the strengths of the Riders, and then the Ticats can attack the weaknesses. Like, can you imagine if Jeremiah Mazzoli gets that extra half second in the pocket with Deron Carter on Brandon Banks, and what, you know, if I'm even, I'm leaving. Banks is going to beat him after 5 or 6 yards off the field. Mazzoli's just going to toss one deep, and it's go time. And then, okay, you know what? They decide to take that away. Okay, you start hitting Jalen Saunders. You start hitting Terrence Oliver. You start hitting Luke Tasker. You give it to Sean Thomas Erlington or Mercer Timmis or Nikita Whitlock or maybe John White or Alex Green played. Like, we don't know if those guys are going to be back. Like, there's just so much on this offense that I – like, the Riders' defense is good. I'm not going to say they're not good. That is a good defense. I don't know if they can hang with this Ticats offense right now. I don't think any defense in the league can.
I just think that June Jones and this offensive coaches are going to come in with a game plan like they did last week, like they did the week before, and they're gonna be victorious. They're going to be successful with that game plan. I have total confidence in it.
I think so too, pal. So that was episode 114 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.